Okay, this is May the 29th, 2004. We're in San Antonio, Texas at the Army Nurse Corps Association Convention, and I'm with Barbara Price.
Hi.
I'm Kara Buick. So let's just start with where you grew up, where you were born and bred.
I was born in Detroit, Michigan, to two wonderful Christian parents who loved each other and my two brothers and I more than most people can ever imagine, so I had a wonderful family life. We did a lot in the outdoors together as a family. At one point in time, my mother was a Girl Scout leader, I was a Girl Scout, my father was a Boy Scout leader, and both my brothers were in the Boy Scouts. I mean, it was just a very wonderful family. And I didn't realize it till later in life that very few kids had that type of family life. Even realized later that some of my best friends had really gone through hard times in their families. Big city, Detroit. When it was very safe, could ride the bus downtown at night to go to a hockey game by myself or meet a friend and stuff, and ride my bike all over the city. It no longer courses like that. That's the way things
are. And did you live in the city itself?
Went to same grade school, first through eighth grades, same high school for 4 years, 4,000 people in the high school. Played as an athlete. I played basketball, field hockey, tennis, and was manager of the swim team. And that was back before Title IX, of course, so we didn't get a lot of benefits in sports.
And what did your parents do? What were their occupations?
My father was a Fuller Brush man, a very successful one. He called himself a Yankee peddler because he was from Maine, and he was an honest man, and he did very well in that business because people respected him. Later on in life, he went was doing commercial store work pretty much. And then he got so he couldn't walk, so he did it all by the telephone. I don't know if you saw what was you don't want to hear that for this. But anyway, there was a recent movie about a salesman that reminded me of my dad so much.
Yeah.
And my mother stayed home with us kids until I got in high school. And then she got a job working. She worked with figures. I can't remember the name of the firm, but she at one time had been a telephone operator before she had her family, and she was a very good fit. She was a math major in college, but did not finish college because she found my father. And she just, for the firm she was working with, she did the auditing, the books, the figures in the books, and that type of thing. Very active in church. All of us very active in church. In fact, I ended up going to a church college after high school, which was interesting because North Manchester, Indiana, the college was a fourth of the size of the high school I'd gone to. So for a big city girl to go to a small community like that to college, it's a beautiful college, beautiful little town.
And what was the college called?
Manchester College.
Manchester College. And what church is that associated with?
Church of the Brethren.
Okay. And is that
a little known church?
I've heard of that. Is that sort of like...
It's an offshoot from the Quakers and the Mormons.
Okay.
Came from Germany about 300 years ago, just like all the other churches did, so they could worship as they pleased. They're pacifists.
Okay, that's what I heard, I think.
And interestingly...
And then you had an army
career. Yeah, it wasn't too popular with some of the folks in my own church because of that. One of my roommates in college had a terrible time with it. But my parents, my father didn't serve in the military because he was too young for World War I and too old for World War II and had three kids and had a civil service job. So he did not have to serve, but both my brothers served in the military.
In World War II or Korea?
No, in between Korea and Vietnam, thank God.
Okay. So it was.
So they didn't have to worry about going off to a war.
And they're peacetime. Older than you.
Yes. One is deceased. Got his He got his doctorate at IU.
Uh-huh.
He was a major in foreign languages, mm-hmm. and went from Manchester. Interestingly enough, he was 3 years older than I.
Mm-hmm.
When he got out of the Army, I was in my second term in college, and he came to the same college. So we went through college together.
Mm-hmm.
It was kind of neat.
Uh-huh. Huh, interesting. And so what was it like for them to join the Army?
They would be drafted eventually. There was still a draft.
Uh-huh.
So they, my one brother didn't know what he wanted to do.
Uh-huh.
And the Army picked up on his knack for foreign languages.
Mm-hmm.
And he went straight through his PhD and got a Fulbright scholarship and,
uh-huh.
and got all kinds of awards scholastically.
Mm-hmm.
He never mentioned grades when we went home on term leaves because I could beat him at tennis. And I didn't get the grades he got.
Uh-huh.
But he was brilliant. Yeah, he recently passed away. My other brother went right to work at Ford Motor Company after he got out of high school, and then on his own worked his way up through his master's, and then when he retired he was an executive from Ford Motor.
Uh-huh. And had you always wanted to be a nurse? Or
no,
when did you decide
no.
to be a nurse?
I would be a phys ed teacher.
Uh-huh. Well, you're in sports.
Right.
Uh-huh.
And loved it.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, the college I went to didn't have as good a sports department for women then as mm-hmm. my high school did. And my father, just before I went to college, my freshman year, was very sick and in the hospital. In fact, some crazy surgeon told him he might not make it. And so my mother asked me not to get a summer job because she was working and she wanted me to be more available to be with my father, because back then they kept you in the hospital for a while. Well, I got very interested in nursing from
mm-hmm.
that. And but still wasn't going to give up my desire to be a teacher,
mm-hmm.
because I thought being a health education teacher was teaching young women how to live a good, clean life, not necessarily just sports.
Mm-hmm.
It was teamwork and this type of thing.
Mm-hmm.
So I went through college with a major in phys ed and psychology, because I knew I didn't want to be a phys ed teacher all my life. I would probably eventually go into counseling.
Mm-hmm.
Supporting courses for both of those were all the supporting courses you would need.
Mm-hmm.
It's amazing, supporting courses for phys ed are astronomical in the human body. For,
mm-hmm.
you have to have human anatomy, human physiology, and a lot of courses that people don't believe.
Yeah.
They think it's a snap course, and it's not.
Mm-hmm.
But when I graduated, I had a double major, phys ed and psychology, but you could only recognize one, of course. And I chose phys ed, but had a letter from the head of the psychology department that I had completed all the requirements for a major in psychology. And then my minor was, of course, biology, because I hadn't taken all those courses.
Mm-hmm.
Senior year outing, beginning of the year, we always had a big outing at Camp Mack. And I was in a baseball game, and I got hit with a baseball, and had a very serious eye injury and ended up losing my left eye.
Mm-hmm.
Got very interested in nursing
uh-huh.
in the hospital.
Uh-huh.
I was in the hospital for 6 weeks. And I did manage to get right back to my to college and catch up and graduate with my class. I took a lot of courses in the weekend courses and night courses to do it, but I,
mm-hmm.
I first the college really didn't want me to come right back to school, but I wanted to get right back into it. My parents agreed, so that we convinced them I went right back to school.
Mm-hmm.
I dropped one course and then picked up on some others, but then I got to thinking about nursing, and I had my student nursing experience, and it was interesting. But I realized that teaching phys ed wasn't the same as playing. So I actually went right in out of college and went right into a school of nursing.
Mm-hmm.
But because I had lost an eye, I couldn't get into a collegiate schools. They didn't feel it qualified me for nursing for some reason, so I found a diploma school, mm-hmm. Northwestern University in Chicago, mm-hmm. that would take me. Mm-hmm. And so I had a diploma in nursing. Mm-hmm. And for 2 years after I graduated, I went into public health nursing in Detroit. Mm-hmm. I had a loan to pay back, so I went back home, and going home is not good after you've been away for 7 years. So I actually did two jobs. I worked public health during the week, and then Friday night and Saturday night I worked evenings on a small hospital that mm-hmm. wasn't far from where I lived, mm-hmm. and paid my loan back. People had tried to get me interested in joining the Army Nurse Corps while I was in nurses training, mm-hmm. and I was interested. The Vietnam War was going on, and mm-hmm. I thought it was a patriotic thing to do.
Mm-hmm. What years were you in the diploma program?
That would be 60 to 64.
Okay, so it was kind of getting started. Yeah, troops were starting to be sent. Yeah.
And I would go to, they actually flew a bunch of us from Chicago to Walter Reed and wined and dined us, and uh-huh. they were very interested in getting me in. Uh-huh. But every time I would bring up my eye, there it went. Uh-huh. Uh-huh. I wasn't eligible. Uh-huh. So,
what kinds of things did they do on that trip when they took you to Walter Reed?
Well, they flew us there, and they showed us Walter Reed, mm-hmm. and of course they had nurses come in and talk to us. Mm-hmm. It was a recruiting program, mm-hmm. and they put us up in, it was probably, there once was before they had Walter Reed Army School of Nursing, there was once a school of nursing there. It was nurses' quarters. We all had our own rooms in nurses' quarters there, and they took us to nice restaurants, fed mm-hmm. us. Mm-hmm. It was a big time recruiting thing. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And then when I went into public health, I tried to get into the student Army student nurse program because they would pay my nursing career. Mm-hmm. It was one of the reasons I was doing it as well. Mm-hmm. But never quit because of the eye. Uh-huh. So I was in. Got into my community health nursing in Detroit. We also did the schools in Detroit. Mm-hmm. And I took a lady who was in her master's degree at Wayne State University out in the, because I was a field trainer, they called me a field trainer. So she went out in the field with me for one day while and when she was through, you know, she said, I'm not supposed to do this, but I'm an Army nurse. And she said, boy, the Army Nurse Corps would love to have you. And I just howled. And yeah, I said, you know, I can't tell you how many times I've tried, uh-huh. but they just don't want me. Uh-huh. So she said, well, why don't you write somebody? Mm-hmm. I said, okay, so I started out writing. First I wrote my congresswoman, and she sent me a very nice letter back that requirements for physical requirements for service in the military were very strict, and mm-hmm. that she didn't think there was any need to follow up on it. Mm-hmm. So then I thought, well, heck, I'm going to write the president. So I wrote this very patriotic letter to the president of the United States, who at that time was Lyndon Johnson. Uh-huh. And at the end, my last paragraph, I remember very well, I said, I do not ask my country for much. All I ask is I'd be given the honor of serving as a nurse in the Army Nurse Corps. Something similar to that. And a few weeks later, I got a letter back from the Surgeon General that says, the President has asked that I reply to your recent letter requiring blah, blah, blah. And if you if you meet all other qualifications, you'll be waived. Mm-hmm. So I got in.
And that was 1964?
That was later. I worked 2 years in community nursing. So, uh-huh. so yeah, it was just amazing. So I got in. Uh-huh. And that was 66 when I went to basic training. Uh-huh.
Wow. And so what did you think about, or what led you to the Army? What you mentioned?
The excitement of travel, uh-huh. the excitement of For some reason, going to Vietnam seemed exciting to me because I had read articles about RE nurses in Vietnam. Mm-hmm. And I was patriotic, and I thought it was a thing to do. You know, I had two brothers who were fortunate enough to have served when there wasn't a war going on, so I thought maybe I could go and support somebody else's brother who mm-hmm. had to serve, you know.
Mm-hmm. Do you remember what those articles were that you read or where you saw them?
Oh, gee.
Was it newspaper or was it?
Like a parade magazine, AJN, newspaper, or? That type of thing. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Hmm. Do you remember seeing any ads or recruitment advertisements for the Army?
No, I don't. I just in nurses training, they would come out and talk to you, mm-hmm. and that's how I got interested originally. Uh-huh. But I suppose our nursing journals probably had ads. They must have.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, they had ads. I'm trying to ask who remembers seeing
yeah.
those. You know.
Mm-hmm.
And so, what you joined up, and what was the feeling in your family? You know, you mentioned your church was pacifist.
Well, yeah,
your brothers had served.
Yeah, my father's brothers. My father would have served most likely if he had been in a position to have had to. My parents were not pacifists.
Mm-hmm.
Their concern was Vietnam, and mm-hmm. his parents they weren't particularly happy about that.
Mm-hmm.
But we were allowed to do, you know, lead our own lives,
mm-hmm.
choose what we were going to do, and mm-hmm. they were proud of me. This is another interesting part.
Mm-hmm.
My first assignment, my recruiter was very wise. She said, don't let them, they were sending nurses right to Vietnam, right, mm-hmm. right out of basic to Vietnam. She said, take an assignment in the States first so you get used to the paperwork and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Because back then you didn't have even stamp plates over in Vietnam and mm-hmm. everything you had to write out. And it was a change from public health to clinical nursing a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
So I took her advice and I went to Fort Benning mm-hmm. for my first assignment. And some civilian picked up my eye situation
mm-hmm.
and sent paperwork through that I wasn't eligible to be in the Army. And then I should be put before, they called them, what type of a board was it? Well, it was a medical board.
Mm-hmm.
And they did, they put me forward, and they determined that I was, I had received a 4 profile for eye, which meant I had to get out of the Army. So I went, but I had been working on a URI ward back before they had immunizations for that type of thing in basic training, and we were working. I mean, our turnover was astronomical. We had basic trainees in, and we'd send 30 over to an outlying ward at midnight sometimes to make room for the others that were coming in. And I'd been working 12 hours and were doing a good job in mm-hmm. establishing myself as a good lieutenant. So I went down to the chief nurse's office, and I said, I want you to put me in medical holding company. And she looked at me like I was crazy. Med hold is where you go. You don't work. You just go and wait. I told her what was going on. She says, oh, no, oh, no. I showed her my letter from the Surgeon General. She says, well, let me get you an appointment with the hospital commander mm-hmm. on this one. So it was Colonel Hal Jennings, who later became mm-hmm. Surgeon General of the Army Medical Department. I hope he's living out where I live. I hope I run into him. So I went in there. I was very, very brave as lieutenant to see the commanding officer. And I said, you know, they've, you know, put me in to get out. And I got a presidential waiver to get in.
Uh-huh.
And he laughed. He says, I'll just send this back to them and tell them to change it. So he did. But when it came back, they just crossed off the four and put a 3 so I could stay in, but they put some qualifications. I couldn't drive a military vehicle, I couldn't fire a weapon, and I couldn't serve in a combat zone.
Mm-hmm.
Whoa. So mm-hmm. back to the commanding officer. I said, you know, I don't care about driving a tank, and I don't care if I fire a weapon, but I joined this Army to go to Vietnam. And bless his heart, he sent it back and made him change it again so I could serve. So I immediately went to personnel to process my paperwork to go so that I'd just in case somebody else came up.
Yeah.
And I went, and I'd actually taken a 2-year leave of absence from my job because I liked what I was doing.
Mm-hmm.
And so I went and had my first tour in Vietnam, and there were about 20 people from my basic training class that all ended up at the same hospital, which is very good for morale.
Mm-hmm.
We had a wonderful chief nurse. I had the most fantastic head nurse ever. And I really liked the Army career.
Uh-huh. And what did you think about Vietnam at that point?
I thought we were doing the right thing. Didn't know any better.
Mm-hmm.
And I was there to take care of the American soldier. Also did a lot of, I was not on a real busy ward. This was my first tour in Vietnam. I did have a
uh-huh.
second tour. And our ward gave me the opportunity to go out and do a lot of medical civic action.
Mm-hmm.
And I went to two orphanages that were nearby and worked with the, there was a pediatrician that, oddly enough, that was in Vietnam down at Second Field Forces, and
mm-hmm.
he would come down in his Jeep and pick up one or two of us nurses, and we'd go out to the orphanages and
uh-huh.
Take care of the children out there and
mm-hmm.
give them medications and stuff.
Sort of like public
mm-hmm.
health nursing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was, exactly.
Mm-hmm.
It was my cup of tea.
Uh-huh.
Then we would bring children in to the really sick babies in sometimes.
Uh-huh.
Couple we kept for some time. In fact, one of the nurses ended up, she had a terrible time getting permission to do it, but getting one of the orphanages and brought her back to the United States.
Mm-hmm.
Baby Jane, we called her.
Mm-hmm.
And didn't have to worry. The commander was concerned that it might take her away from patient care, but it didn't, because the GIs took care of them most of the time. When we get the kids ready for their baths, put them in this little pan we had, because they were all so small.
Mm-hmm.
I've got slides of the GIs and taking care of it. It was fantastic for their morale because it brought them back
uh-huh.
to, it brought us back too, to reality, children.
Mm-hmm.
Things,
mm-hmm.
things that wasn't seen, even though they were sick,
it was
good to go out on those medical civic action programs. Interesting, we had a lot of celebrities, of course, that would visit, and so many of them would just, you know, they were there for their publicity, and they come on the ward, you know, here comes so and so, and they come through. But James Garner came, and he didn't come announced. He just all of a sudden you saw that he was on the ward, and he was going. You know who James Garner is, actor.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I always liked him anyway, but I liked him even better after this. But he just sat down on the bunk of every other GI and talked to him like he was his next door neighbor, and it was really neat. But
uh-huh.
he got down to the nurse's station, and he saw we had a baby that from the orphanage, and we knew it was not, you know, it was a preemie. We probably weren't going to be able to save it. But we had made an incubator out of a cardboard box and a light bulb.
Mm-hmm.
And James Garner sat and looked at that, and he got tears in his eyes.
Uh-huh.
And it brings tears to my eyes to remember that scene. But
uh-huh.
That, you know, we would go to that length to try to save kid, and that we would be ingenious enough to
mm-hmm.
make an incubator out of a cardboard box and a light bulb.
Mm-hmm.
But
and which hospital was this again, you said?
9030 back,
uh-huh.
near Benoit.
Uh-huh.
Later became part of Long Binh Post, which became mm-hmm. a huge post in Vietnam.
Uh-huh. And that's where everybody came in.
Yeah.
To when they first got in country.
Mm-hmm. My first night in country, I was at the 90th Replacement Company. And we got assignments from the chief nurse of Vietnam, who was in Saigon,
mm-hmm.
and we had to wait transportation. But my first night in country, I kept hearing this boom, boom, boom. And so I got up and I put my fatigues on, because I was the only one in this hutch. They had a little hutch for females that came in.
Mm-hmm.
And it kept me louder and louder. Finally, the window fell down on top of me, and I thought, something's going on. So I got up and I put my boots on, and I went out, and there's this little PFC at the gate of this big chain link fence around us, and Constantine Ware on top of him. He says, "Ma'am, get back inside. I'm here to guard you." And I said, "You get out of my way and show me the way to the male BOQ." Because I'd come in country with a couple of male officers that I knew would be down there.
Uh-huh.
And sure enough, I found a helicopter pilot, dust-off pilot,
uh-huh.
that came in country on the same plane. And he was sitting on some sandbags. He says, hi, come on up. He says, this is nothing. What they've done, they're hitting that ammo dump over there, and some sapper got through, and one pad after the other went off. I've never seen, I can't even enjoy a fireworks thing anymore because it was nothing like that. One pad of ammunition went off after another because it kept catching the next pad. And it was like daylight. It went on all night long. And I later was assigned to the 9030 VAC, which was within a mile of that ammo dump, and they routinely would hit that ammo dump about every 3 months. So we got the excitement of that. And they would pass out our gas masks. We had gas protective masks, but at that time we never kept them with us. They were in a room, and when every time they hit that ammo dump, they'd pass out our protective mask to us, making you wonder what we had stored in there. But
And how long were you at this hospital?
12 months.
For the whole year?
Left just before Ted of 68 hit. And which made me miserable back home while that was going on, because I knew we weren't getting the right stories. We'd already been, they started confining us because we knew it was coming. And you could just tell when you rode through the streets and stuff, things were going on. And I was sneaking out the gate to go to the orphanages still. And finally my chief nurse called me in and she said, Barbara, do I have to give you a direct order that you will stay on this compound? Or are you just going to tell me you'll stay on this compound? So that was the end of that. Couldn't go to the orphanages anymore. And then I went home, and then Ted hit, and of course it was big time in the news, but I knew they weren't telling everything. But then I got letters from my corpsmen that were back in the state, back there, and they said that Charlie, as we called him, actually ran through the compound, but didn't bother them. They just wanted to show that they could do it. And they had soldiers everywhere. Medical doctors were doing surgical procedures in the PT clinic. I mean, like abdominal surgery procedures in the PT clinic. And they were just overran. They had soldiers laying around waiting for care. And I would have rather been back there with them than home listening about it. So. But I was teaching at a 91 Charlie School, which was preparing soldiers. It's an LP, and then it was they call it 91 Charlie, they call it something else now, but it's the Army's Licensed Practical Nurse course.
Okay.
Advanced medics. And they were pretty much going from there to Vietnam. And they were putting them through so fast, we were working so hard. I would be on the platform like 8 hours a day sometimes. And my roommates would help me grade papers and stuff. And every nurse instructor had a senior NCO assigned that was also an instructor. And he pretty much stayed up on the wards and clinical, where I really wanted to be up on the wards and clinical, although because I had my BS degree in education, the Army, of course, put me right into education when we got back from Vietnam. So I finally went and talked to the chief nurses. I said, you know, I'd rather go back to Vietnam than teach another year. And she took me up on it. I actually didn't truly mean it, but I didn't mind going back. But my second tour was quite different. This was 1970, the 67th back, Quinion, because I was on a ICU ward. And it was the neurosurgical center. We had a 20-bed ward, and a third of the nursing staff was assigned to that ward because we also did recovery in ICU. So we had a good sized nursing staff as well as advanced medics that worked it. And I saw more trauma. I mean, you didn't see just somebody with a head injury. They had amputee and an abdominal or a chest wound as well. And it was really, it really took a lot out of you. And it changed you, I remember I went on that ward for 3 months, and then I went into the night supervisor for 6 months. And when I actually either worked casualty receiving or that ward, because when they were busy, because I'd been trained on the ICU ward. I think some of the worst things I saw, and they stick in my head, was an amputee coming in, and I mean his foot was just laying on the litter, his lower leg, and the doctor picking it up and throwing it on the floor and saying, "This whole damn war isn't worth any man's arm or leg or life." And it was so true, mm-hmm. by hindsight. And we had a man come in, a soldier come in, with no identification, and a head wound, and most of his face was missing. And so he was called expected. Mm-hmm. And that, do you know what expected is in triage? Mm-hmm. They're expected to die, they're not expected to live. Mm-hmm. So, and the neurosurgeon said, "There's no way I can do anything for this soldier." Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, but he was still alive. I mean, they were young. So they put him in a back room, and I said, we can't just leave him there alone. So I stayed with him, and I told him, I said, "We don't know your name, but I had a brother named Bob, so I'm going to call you Bob." Mm-hmm. And I stayed with him for about 3 hours, taking his blood pressure until he finally expired. And,
Mm-hmm. And triage in Vietnam was different than it would be at home. At home, treat the most,
right.
Or you get know, the most seriously
where
wounded
where maybe
in first.
At home you could save a man's leg. If you had 15 soldiers back to come up at the ER, you couldn't be working on vessels of a leg to save it for 6 hours because you had soldiers to save, so they amputated.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And how did that? I mean, how did you deal with that as a nurse? Your purpose is to heal, and then it seems you're seeing a lot that you can't do.
That was tough. It was mm-hmm. tough. It was tough on everybody. It was the doctors took it very hard. Mm-hmm. But everybody learned to deal with it in a different way.
Mm-hmm.
And I chose to look back on some of the positive aspects of my experience, mm-hmm. the camaraderie, how we stuck together and worked hard. Mm-hmm. And how we really cared. There was no such thing as racial prejudice or religious prejudice. We were just all together. You took care of everybody just like they were, everybody's blood was red.
Mm-hmm.
And you can't imagine. It's almost like institutionalization. I was almost glad to go back from a second tour because I had missed how close that unit was.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And even though it was different, the only thing I requested when I went back was that they didn't send me to the same place because I knew that wouldn't be the same people.
Mm-hmm.
So I ended up at the 67th Evac.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't do MedCap then because we were so busy on the ICU ward.
Mm-hmm.
And then when I our shifts were 12-hour shifts, we usually would try to give each other a 2-hour break, mm-hmm. and what we'd do would just lay on a litter and rest for a couple hours. We wouldn't leave the ward, so.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of times you couldn't do that.
Mm-hmm.
And then all of a sudden the chief nurse realized that all I was doing was eating breakfast, going to work, eating dinner, going to bed. eating breakfast, going to bed, then eating dinner and going to work. And she said, "You've had enough of this. We'll put you back in ICU as a head nurse."
Mm-hmm.
So my last 3 months, I was a head nurse on the ICU ward.
Uh-huh. And what was your rank at that point?
Captain.
Uh-huh. So you ranked a little bit higher than most of the nurses.
No.
Right?
I was older when I went in. I was, because I had so much trouble getting in. I was 27 when I joined the Army Nurse Corps,
uh-huh.
which put me, I think they gave me some jobs ahead of my time because I was a little bit more mature.
Mm-hmm.
Most of the head nurses that preceded me had been majors,
mm-hmm.
on the ICU ward, and your evening night supervisors usually weren't captains, it would be majors.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So
how did you relate to the younger nurses? I mean, was there a big difference,
well,
you think?
No, they were right out of training, and of course I went into public health, so essentially I was too.
Mm-hmm.
I remember one night I was working my first tour. I had to start an IV, And my head nurse was fantastic gal. I happened to come on the ward. She just would come up and visit sometimes when we were on nights. And I said, I'm having a terrible time with this IV. And she said, well, let me give it a try. And afterwards, I said, you know, I'd been in public health. And she laughed. She says, I've been in psych. She says, I was just as shaky as you were. But once I got in on my second tour, of course, I whip an IV in a minute.
Uh-huh.
We made decisions that you normally wouldn't make it in nursing. I mean,
uh-huh.
If all the docs were tied up, patient needed to be put on a ventilator, you didn't need a doctor's order, you put them on it.
Uh-huh.
Of course, we didn't have ventilators, we had field anesthesia machines that we used.
Uh-huh.
And it was hard to go back into civilian nursing after the Army, and a lot of women didn't. They got out and they didn't go into nursing.
Uh-huh.
And they were a lot of the women that didn't tell their families that they'd ever been an Army nurse.
Mm-hmm.
Have you read any of Diane Carlson Evans' stuff?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
She's a, what a wonderful, I wish she'd write a book.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if she ever will, but
mm-hmm.
A great gal. And her articles tell a lot about
mm-hmm.
Vietnam. Now, she had a terrible time dealing with Vietnam. Like I say, people deal with it in different ways.
Mm-hmm.
Those who stayed in the Army had the camaraderie of our nurses.
Mm-hmm.
This is the first time I've ever given an interview. I've always refused to do it.
Mm-hmm.
It's interesting. I've been out of the Army now 12 years, retired 12 years, and normally don't talk about, we commented to each other that we didn't talk about Vietnam,
mm-hmm.
even when we were together, but for some reason it was a support group.
Mm-hmm.
I pretty much got out of the clinical area and was in education most of my career. Enlisted training. I was director of LPN school at Fort Bragg for 4 years, and then I went into a staff position in Europe for 3 years, where I was the deputy to the chief nurse of Europe.
Mm-hmm.
They call it senior staff officer. And I assigned all nurses throughout Europe except for key positions. And I also did the education for all the nurses throughout Europe. That was a real fun job,
mm-hmm.
because I could plan. I told the University of Maryland Education Department what we wanted, and they would come over with fantastic speakers.
Mm-hmm.
They just got really good programs. And then we'd go to Garmisch and have these conferences, which is, if you know Europe at all, Garmisch is it's in Bavaria, and it's a very beautiful,
mm-hmm.
beautiful area. The Army had recreation facilities down there. We had several big hotels,
uh-huh.
and it was a really nice place to have it, and that was a really fun job. And then I wanted to be a chief nurse the last 8 years of my career.
Uh-huh.
So my only clinical experience in the Army Nurse Corps, for the most part, was Vietnam.
Uh-huh.
I had 6 months, or close to a year, as a head nurse out of neurosurgery ward at Fitzsimmons,
mm-hmm.
when I came back from my second tour
mm-hmm.
in Vietnam, which I was glad I had, because our neurosurgeon kept telling me, Barbara, these guys will, the ones that he could do surgery on and save, mm-hmm. he said, they'll have, their personalities will change, but they'll come back and they'll be able to function in life.
Mm-hmm.
And I got to see that.
Mm-hmm.
So that was kind of good.
Uh-huh.
Then I went back into education.
Mm-hmm.
Then 4 years at Fort Sam teaching basic medics again.
Mm-hmm.
And then I went into being director of the 91C school for 4 years. And
mm-hmm.
So I really, when I counted up my years of clinical experience,
uh-huh.
it was about, actually clinical on the ward, it wasn't more than 3 or 4 years, and 2 of them were in Vietnam.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
And
what made you decide to make the Army a career? And why did
you
stay in?
Remember I took a 2-year leave of absence?
Mm-hmm.
They gave you more opportunities,
mm-hmm.
even in civilian. I mean, when you're back stateside,
mm-hmm.
you have more responsibilities and you can make more decisions than,
mm-hmm.
than civilian nurses can make.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
And was the rank something that was very important, that meant a lot?
The rank?
Mm-hmm.
Well, it was money.
Mm-hmm.
and of course, in time you're in a competitive type situation. You want to get promoted.
Mm-hmm.
I came in as a first lieutenant because I'd had 2 years' experience in nursing, and that was an incentive to get people in. Mm-hmm. And I got a field promotion to captain in 13 months mm-hmm. while I was in Vietnam. So that was a real quick promotion to captain. Then I was 4 3/4 years before they ever had a board that I could meet for major. Mm-hmm. But then I made it. And then my other group promotions came, routinely. My last, I guess it was last 5 or 6 years, I was a full colonel. Mm-hmm. I was a chief nurse. Mm-hmm. And I loved being a chief nurse. Mm-hmm. I loved enlisted training. I loved teaching. But
Decided you liked it after all.
Yeah. But being a chief nurse, I really liked it. Fortunately, I didn't go to a large med center. I was in smaller hospitals, but it was really enjoyable. Mm-hmm. And after 26 years, I liked every day of it. Mm-hmm. It took me about 3 days to adjust to retirement because because I had so many things I wanted to do, and I did a lot of traveling. And that. Uh-huh. But, uh-huh. Uh-huh. Gosh, you didn't have to ask any questions, Harry.
What kind of differences did you see between your first and second tours in Vietnam?
Big difference, because mm-hmm. The war had become very unpopular. Uh-huh. I don't remember it being unpopular when I went in for my first tour in 67. Mm-hmm. But in just 2 years. When I came back from it was unpopular. Mm-hmm. I had a very brave pastor in my church at home mm-hmm. that asked me to come talk to the youth about it. Mm-hmm. And, I decided I would just tell them what the setup of an Army hospital was like and tell them about my medical civic action program uh-huh. work and had slides and stuff and went. And, the whole church showed up, mm-hmm. not just the youth. Uh-huh. I knew I was gonna get hit with some, tough questions, but I'm here to tell you I had some Sunday school teachers that had taught me Sunday school that weren't very loving and kind and nice, uh-huh. and here I am saying, I was doing nursing, I was saving lives, and I was going out and doing medical civic action, but they were protesting the war right there mm-hmm. and holding me responsible. Uh-huh. It was so bad that the pastor wrote me a letter of apology. Mm-hmm.
For it. Mm-hmm. What kinds of things did they say or ask you?
The typical things that people were asking, why are we there? Why should we be there? And the best I could do was tell them, I was taking care of a little boy on the ward who saw his parents shot and killed right in front of him because they were trying to be in political things that weren't communist. Mm-hmm. And how can you justify that, true pacifists just don't, you don't kill anything. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. They really ganged up on me. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And what did you think then? Let's see, your second tour was in 70. And okay.
I still, and to this day, I think in the long run, that war wasn't useless. It did help in our fight against communism in the world. I really believe that. Mm-hmm. But by hindsight, mm-hmm. The words of that doctor, this whole war isn't worth any man's armor, let alone his life, mm-hmm. sticks in my mind. Mm-hmm. Because they were so young, mm-hmm. we would, on the ICU, when we couldn't get them out in time, once you stabilize them, the Air Force was great about evacuating the soldiers out, you'd get them out. Mm-hmm. But sometimes you couldn't stabilize. Like we have a cardiac tamponade, which is he had a fragment of some wound that was in the artery that was very close to his heart. We could not send him out. Mm-hmm. And so he was on the ward for about 4 weeks, and we became his family, mm-hmm. because he had no one. So, and you did that a lot on the ICU. You became their families. Mm-hmm. And so when you lost one, it was even, I mean, it's never easy to lose a patient, uh-huh. but you got so close to them, and they would tell you their stories uh-huh. about what they've been through. And, uh-huh. hmm. And I never heard any of the Carey stories that he's telling from them. It would just be how terrible it was when they see their buddy shot and killed. And mm-hmm. My first term, we had what they call a first year, we had a KO psych team. And a KO team is a team that goes out into the field normally and mm-hmm. works with the soldiers. They would have surgical teams that would go out and different types of teams. But. The KO psych team, for the most part, was stabilized on our ward there. Mm-hmm. And we had a soldier that came in that couldn't get on the plane to go home. Mm-hmm. And they'd take him up, we had dust off pilots, they'd come over and they'd take him up, fly him around in the helicopter and bring him back. And the doc would feel, okay, he's ready. He sent him down to go home and he couldn't get on the plane. Mm-hmm. And finally, his commanding officer came in. And he said, oh, I can tell you what his problem is. He saw his entire squad killed one right after the other, and he was the only one that survived. Mm-hmm. And he didn't think he should have.
Mm-hmm. Got survivor's guilt.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So they ended up just snorkeling him with some Thorazine. That was what they used back then, and putting him between two litters and put him on the plane and send him home. Mm-hmm. And I imagine he's a PTSD.
Mm-hmm. What would happen to him? Would he kind of hyperventilate or something when he got on, or?
I was never there when he. Oh, okay. He would get to the gangplank and just would not get out. He wouldn't get out.
Okay. Oh.
And I can't remember if they sent any of the corpsmen with him to try and help him or not. Mm-hmm. I imagine they probably did. But
mm-hmm. Did they ever send any of the nurses, the female nurses, out on these? You said they were KO squad?
Yeah, if they were males back then, they wouldn't send the females into real thick combat, although some of them will tell you they did. Male anesthetists uh-huh. and surgical nurses would mm-hmm. go out with surgical uh-huh. teams.
And what was the reasoning for not sending women? Was it the combat situation?
Yeah.
Or did you feel like you were, like you wanted to go, or did you feel a certain way about that decision?
Well, I wasn't in surgical nursing, so and they wanted or operating room nurses mm-hmm. and nurse anesthetists uh-huh. and surgeons. We pretty much made up that team.
Uh-huh.
That ward didn't have a line of demarcation, so we were in harm's way all the time. And we got to, we would sit out in the bunkers at night and watch tracer bullets fly over. They were shooting things back and forth,
uh-huh.
and different things, and we uh-huh. had to go to the bunkers a lot for safety.
Yeah.
My first chief nurse was still alive, a delightful lady, always tells the story about a good friend of mine, Karen, and we would get in the bunker and we'd start talking, people would start talking about things they missed at home and stuff. And we'd get on our dogs, because our dogs didn't understand where we were. We didn't worry about our parents, because they knew and could understand, but we had to leave our dogs and we'd start crying. And the things you would crave, a Big Mac.
Uh-huh.
I mean, the really weird things that you miss from back home.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. What kinds of things did you do in your free time? Little free time there was?
Pretty much med cap.
Uh-huh.
A lot of times you just go back up on the ward and write letters for the guys who couldn't write letters.
Mm-hmm.
Sneak into Saigon every now and then when it was off limits. I got mm-hmm. caught off limits in Saigon. Uh-huh. Once, and had seen my commanding officer about that. But Saigon had, there was an army hospital in Saigon, so there were nurses in Saigon.
Mm-hmm.
But it was off limits because it was considered dangerous at the time.
Mm-hmm.
It had been infiltrated with Charlie or VC, I don't know what, but we were dating two guys from Second Field Forces, and they had access to a Jeep. Mm-hmm. This was a group that was just down the road from us, so we were going into Saigon. Mm-hmm. So they got us flak jackets and helmets. And we actually got shot at going past Highway 1. Saigon was only probably 50 miles, but the roads weren't all that great. Mm-hmm. And we wanted to go to the commissary in there because they got real vegetables and stuff that we couldn't get. And we did have a little lounge in our quarters where we could cook, stove and refrigerator and stuff. Mm-hmm. You'd go up for a flight in a helicopter if the dust-offs weren't busy. And uh-huh. Vietnam was a beautiful country, uh-huh. absolutely gorgeous.
Uh-huh. And were there rules about the nurses not being in helicopters?
Yep.
Were you not supposed to really do that?
Yep.
I thought there were.
unless you were accompanying a patient in
okay.
Saigon to go in on a flight. We did that occasionally.
Uh-huh.
But then you had orders.
Uh-huh. Yeah. And so to get a ride on a helicopter, you had to sneak around, or did they just kind of look the other way?
Yeah.
Just kind of look the other way.
Mm-hmm. My second tour, I didn't go on a helicopter.
Uh-huh.
Because I realized how dangerous it was.
Uh-huh.
It was crazy.
Uh-huh. And you mentioned that you and a friend were dating two of the guys that were nearby.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Was that common, kind of to hook up with somebody and hang out?
No. Yes, it was common, but it was difficult because it was hard to find a single soldier that was your age.
Uh-huh.
A lot of the nurses dated the married docs, and they were sure they were going to leave their wives, but a lot of tears flowed when they left to go home and said, I'm going back to my wife.
Uh-huh.
But when I would get interested in somebody, I'd have the chaplain check with his chaplain, see if he was married or not. If, uh-huh. if he was married, I wouldn't date. I just didn't feel that was, my feeling was, that wasn't fair to their wife.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I didn't particularly want to date a married person anyway, but
uh-huh.
because back then it was still pretty much you didn't do that.
Uh-huh.
So I always said there weren't many guys that were loyal to their wives.
Uh-huh.
But my nurses that came back from the Gulf War also said that there weren't many married women that were loyal to their husbands. So.
Uh-huh. Goes both ways.
Yeah.
Huh. So now you weren't supposed to date enlisted men or even to socialize with the enlisted, right?
No.
But was that another thing that was just kind of ignored, or was that really
no.
enforced?
Oh, that was really enforced because okay. the docs insisted, the commanding officer insisted on it because the docs wanted to date the nurses.
Oh.
And you had chief nurses that were hardcore sometimes,
uh-huh.
But when you were working, like I was working on it, when I was working on the ICU, well, and I had a close relationship with my corpsman my first tour too,
uh-huh.
but I couldn't kept it very professional.
Uh-huh.
They called me by my rank, and I called them by their rank.
Uh-huh.
But we did. We had to get close. I mean,
mm-hmm.
You worked with them 12 hours a day, and sometimes more. I can remember my second tour. In the ICU, my nurses and corpsmen were calling themselves each other by their first names. My chief nurse came to me and she said, "You've got to stop that." And I just looked at her and I said, "I've got a list of things here I've got to do, and I'm going to put that one on the bottom."
Mm-hmm.
And she did not like that answer at all.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't have a real close relationship with that chief nurse, but it was so funny because it wasn't 2 weeks later. And these guys, a guy that had never called me by my first name, we had two codes going at the same time, and she was on the ward. Well, she never stayed long when we had codes going. She got off the wards. But he yells, "Barbara, get over here, we got another one."
Uh-huh.
So I said, "Excuse me." I went and laughed about that. She never mentioned it, but
uh-huh.
but and I knew that my nurses were dating some of the corpsmen, and it didn't matter to me.
Uh-huh.
And I told the chief nurse it's better than the married docs.
Uh-huh.
You know.
Mm-hmm.
And In fact, there was a group of my nurses that lived, by then we had fairly decent quarters, a 12-by-8 room, which was decent, believe it or not. And I knew a bunch of them would meet in this one room that was around the corner. Our quarters were shaped in a square. Mm-hmm. And I came out the door one day, and one guy was coming in to go in, and he stopped dead in his tracks, and I said, "Don't move, because the chief nurse is walking this way." And so he ducks down, and I just kind of stood there and waved to her, and she went, got by, says, "Okay, you're safe now." Because they were just having a good time together, you know. They uh-huh. get together, I don't know what they did, you know, as a group of them.
So uh-huh.
It didn't matter to me.
Uh-huh. Did you find any problems with alcohol or drugs at all?
I had never drank until I went to Vietnam, and you couldn't get cold Cokes, but you could always get cold beer for some reason.
Uh-huh.
Even in our hospital, our surgeons had built a little officers club, and they did a fairly decent job. It was a nice little club, mm-hmm. and you'd go up and drink. And you know, I didn't drink excessively, but I think I probably. I do drink now, you know, socially, but a lot of people have. Our surgeons would get smashed sometimes. It was absolutely amazing what adrenaline will do.
Mm-hmm.
If you get a push, what we call it a push, when a large group of patients come, you never like to see a Chinook coming in.
Mm-hmm.
That's that big helicopter that can hold a lot of patients.
Uh-huh.
It's amazing how they could sober up just like that,
uh-huh.
and go into surgery. And I wasn't a surgical nurse, but one of my best friends was, and she says it was absolutely amazing
uh-huh.
when the adrenaline starts going,
uh-huh.
it can keep you moving.
Uh-huh.
Mm. We called it an adrenaline rush.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm. And what did you think about the women's movements and all of that? Kind of getting started in the late 60s.
Well, I don't want to say that I was a woman's activist, but I was certainly for equal rights.
Mm-hmm.
And who is it that started that movement? Can I think of her name?
Friedan, Betty Friedan? Is that who you're thinking?
No.
Feminine Mystique.
She had a magazine too.
Oh, Gloria Steinem.
Yeah.
Ms. Magazine.
I had respect for her.
Mm-hmm.
And her ideas were right.
Uh-huh.
I believed in equal opportunity, for
uh-huh.
sure.
Did you think you had that in your career?
In the military, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Of course, it's even more so now, nurses can take command. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But a young doctor was a fool if he didn't take, advice from an experienced nurse in some things.
Mm-hmm.
And they knew it, most of them.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm. Did you ever run into problems giving orders to men who ranked lower than you? Was there any resistance?
I didn't have any problems.
Uh-huh.
No, some nurses did. Some nurses didn't take leadership, officer type leadership, serious.
Uh-huh.
And they had problems because then they didn't, they lost control.
Mm-hmm.
Because the corpsmen usually would be the ones. We did have male nurses.
Mm-hmm.
And I gave, you know, respected them very much. And we had mutual respect for each other. I think it was no problem.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But you didn't feel any kind of animosity in some of the assignments, like sending men out in the field, but not the women?
No, that was, back then it seemed logical,
uh-huh.
you know. I don't know how the OR nurses felt. Mm-hmm. I was an OR nurse,
uh-huh.
And the nurse anesthetist
uh-huh.
felt about it.
Uh-huh. And you said it seemed logical? What?
Back then it seemed the logical thing to do, you know, because they weren't sending nurses, quote unquote, into combat. But
uh-huh.
of course, Army nurses have served in combat zones since the war, the first war we ever had,
uh-huh.
Revolution War or whatever. And In the Vietnam, it was funny. We would hitchhike to go any place we wanted to go. And we, when I say hitchhike, we would catch a ride with a military vehicle, a U.S. military vehicle. I remember this one time we were hitchhiking into the Benoit Air Force Base because they had a swimming pool.
Uh-huh.
A friend of mine, and this convoy was coming along. And my gosh, this lieutenant stopped his whole convoy and said, "Where are you going?"
Uh-huh.
And he took us in, and it was that way out of their way.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
He took us to where we were going and said, "Ladies, have a nice day." He came back up. We had a tremendous amount of respect from,
uh-huh,
from the soldiers.
Uh-huh. You think that was because you were officers, or because you were women,
women,
or because you were both?
Because we had round eyes, and we were women. I mean, that for sure.
Uh-huh.
And we were nurses, and they had a lot of respect for us. They knew what we were doing.
Uh-huh.
And they would. And I was, you know, I did my medical med cap programs, my enlisted men.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. Did you ever experience any harassment, or any of the more negative sides of being a woman in the military?
You mean like sexual harassment? Mm-hmm. Well, you're all hit on. I didn't have a problem handling it.
Mm-hmm.
That may be because I went in when I was older, too.
Uh-huh.
But, a lot. I think that more so the enlisted women maybe had, not just in a combat zone, but in the military, and it's still a problem. There's no doubt in my mind.
Uh-huh.
But again, women officers, line officers may have problems. I guess they do. Look at the, things that are going on like at West Point and Annapolis. It's,
mm-hmm,
pretty serious stuff. And it goes on. You know it goes on for sure. In fact, when I was director at 91C School, one of my male instructor sergeants had very short of time affair with a student, but it happened before he was an instructor and before she was a student.
Mm-hmm.
And her roommate was jealous and wrote a letter to the hospital commander. And they came down really hard on him. They,
mm-hmm,
were, the Army doesn't put up with infidelity and married people. I mean, they really do court-martial people for things like that.
Mm-hmm.
If they catch them in it, if it's the right commanding officer who doesn't let things slide by.
Mm-hmm.
But for some reason, they really wanted this guy. He was one of the sharpest instructors I had, and he was just sick. He was married, and his wife was, away. She was in nursing school, and they wanted to give him I'm having a senior moment. A letter of, they wanted to remove him.
Mm-hmm.
And that would give him an OER that would end his career.
Uh-huh.
Not just removing, but really give him, it would be like disciplinary action short of court martial.
Uh-huh.
And